A reading from the book of Exodus. The Lord said to Moses, "Go down at once to your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, for they have become depraved. They have soon turned aside from the way I pointed out to them, making for themselves a molten calf and worshiping it, sacrificing to it and crying out, 'This is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt.' I see how stiff-necked this people is," continued the Lord to Moses. "Let me alone then, that my wrath may blaze up against them to consume them. Then I will make of you a great nation." But Moses implored the Lord, his God, saying, "Why, O Lord, should your wrath blaze up against your own people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with such great power and with so strong a hand? Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and how you swore to them by your own self, saying, 'I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And all this land that I promised I will give your descendants as their perpetual heritage.' So the Lord relented in the punishment he had threatened to inflict on his people." The word of the Lord. We humans seem often to struggle with idolatry. We're not so likely to construct for ourselves a golden calf as the Israelites did in the book of Exodus. But we do fall into the temptation of creating a god in our own image and likeness, often an avenging god who waits to pounce on us when we stray from the good, a god who has to be coaxed into forgiving us. Or we may fashion for ourselves a God who divides this population up into the worthy and the unworthy, expected to reward and punish according to our limited human standards of justice. Few, it seems, can imagine the kind of extravagant love that comes from the true God. In fact, it is precisely to show us this unimaginably lavish God that Jesus came. Again and again he tells parables to turn the people toward the mercy and generosity of a God they could never have dreamed of. This is the God the Apostle Paul had encountered. In his letter to Timothy, Paul fully acknowledges that he is a sinner. The foremost sinner, he says, for he was a blasphemer, a persecutor, and arrogant. But Paul has come to trust the mercy of God, which is infinitely greater than his sin. He even sees that Christ's forgiveness of him can be used to attract others to drink from the well of divine mercy. The Pharisees and scribes, on the other hand, are presented in the gospel as people who just don't get the point. They are utterly confounded by Jesus' message and by his tendency to associate with sinners. It's easy to judge them as hard-hearted, but are we any clearer about who Jesus really is? How many of us find his message either too hard to accept or too good to be true? Either way, Jesus keeps pursuing us, hoping to win our hearts, as he kept trying to win over the people of his own day. He tells stories and uses images, knowing that this imaginative approach can sometimes help people see what they don't get in straight talk. If we think we're better than others, more faithful, more deserving, or simply members of a privileged class, Jesus tells the parable of the guests at table and invites us to be at home in the last place. If we suppose that we have a secure place in the kingdom without embracing the cross, he urges us to enter by the narrow gate, letting go of whatever keeps us from him. He knows that we will never be happy and we will never be true disciples as long as we're holding back. In today's gospel, he speaks to two different groups of people. The younger son stands in the place of those who think their sin is so great that even God can't forgive them. In one sense, they have learned something about discipleship as they ask the Father for the last place, the place of the servant. But they need to experience the Father's abundant mercy so they can let go of their image of a vengeful God. The older son represents another group of people who also need to experience the Father's generous love. So preoccupied are they with comparing themselves to their less faithful brothers and sisters that they don't see the unmerited care that has held them tenderly all their lives. The Father gently lures them away from their better, good guy role and begs them to plunge into the unconditional love that is theirs as gift. It seems that there are 101 ways we can doubt God's love, and only one way we can trust. That one way is to throw ourselves into the arms of the God who loves us beyond our imagining. Being loved so deeply enables us to love and forgive others. It also makes of us wounded healers and powerful preachers of grace.